Before we wanted to add one nikudat lashonama, as they say, and that relates to the issue that Sam brought up, which is the question of the asra. When does the asra for a shuas bito the hapa have to be given? Right, and the question is it before the act that violates the shua? Right, the achila. Let's say in the case of nishmasha lo ochal. So the achila, before he eats, then you'd have to deliver the asra, or perhaps before the shua itself. So first, I'll just discuss what we find in the koros in this question, and then we'll move to analyze it. In particular, its relationship, as Sam was hinting to the question that we discussed at the end of last year. So first, in terms of koros, so one context this issue emerges is actually the Gemara we saw is Shitas Reish Lakish regarding Hasra Safik. Right, the Gemara says that just first by word of background, Hasra Safik is Hasra where even if the Hasra is defied, it doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be an Avera. So one can ignore the Hasra, one can defy the Hasra, and if there's still not an Avera necessarily, so that's Hasra Safik. So Reish Lakish says that the case, right, that the case of the reason that Nishbasha lo ochal, right? The Gemara says everybody agrees that Nishbasha ochal, and he doesn't, and the lo ochel, everybody agrees there's a mamas in that case. Rabbi Yochanan thinks that's because, right, that's because Nish, because he lavshi imbo maisa, and Rabbi Reish Lakish thinks that, look, that's because there the asra is asra safik, right? At every moment, even if he doesn't listen to the asra, he can still say, I still have time. And therefore, even if I defy the asra b'tochadei dibur by not eating, I'm not necessarily going to be over. So therefore, Reish Lakish says that's asra safik, and Shitas Reish Lakish is lo havya asra. Right, whereas Rabbi Yochanan, in general, thinks that asra safik havya asra. So the Gemara in Tumura and in Shuas, right, the Gemara wherever that Gemara appears, says that that's the reason for Reish Lakish that Shuas ocha below ocha is in lokes because it's asra safik. Now the question becomes: what is the hasra there? What is the asra safik? So just in describing that, you have two different explanations or descriptions in Rishon and Rashi, in Shuas HaBalaf and in Tumura, all the times that the sugya comes up, explains that the Asura consists of Yizar B'cha, right? Like I just described it essentially, Yizar B'cha Shetochal Kikar Shemshbat Aleh. That's the Asura, and inasmuch as if I ignore that Asura, right, eat these Kikar, otherwise you could be over on Shuas Bitui. So inasmuch as that's the case, that even if he ignores it, he'll still be possibly avoid any avera. That's asra safik. Eat now. If he doesn't eat now, he can still eat later on. Therefore, that's asra safik. So the clear implication in Rashi, and this is I think the vast majority of Rishonim, is that the asra must be b'shas avera al hashvua, right before the act of achil. However, here and there you find hints of other shitos that disagree. And here I sent you Mekaros or Minchanan al Sachim. So he, in describing Hasra as such a case, implies that the Hasra is given b'sha'as ha'shvua. What he says is that k'shemasim bo, k'meshemasim oso b'sha'as ha'shvua, al tishava shema lo yizdamin lo l'achla hayom, v'nimtzeis over ha'shvuascha. Right, so what Rabbi Nechanan describes as the Hasra is, I tell the person prior to taking the shvua, don't take the shvua, because if you do, you might not actually end up eating it, and therefore you're going to be over on shvuas, on shvua sheker. On Shuas Bitu'el Ha'aba. So he clearly explicitly says, right, that's when the Hasra is given, and that's Hasra Safik, right? Ki Tachin Lo Lo'achla V'Kayim Shuaso V'Chigai Gavna Kwan Reish Lakish Ein Hasra. Yeah?
Shuas Metzius that, you know, as you know, he wants to take a Shua.
He's rearing, you know, first of all, it doesn't have to be that he gets Hasra, right?
I know, but
in order to get an own, it should, but somehow you would know. I don't know. Meaning the guy's like, you know, I'm going to take a shua. He said, well done.
Right.
And you start saying, I need nishba, right?
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. Like, how are you going to know that somebody's about to commit murder? Anytime you get a surah, you're anticipating what might happen.
Oh, there you can see, like, a gun or something. But,
right, okay. So, now, this also seems to be, and this is what the Ramban Magus appears to be pointing out, this also seems to be the assumption of the Yushalmi that we saw. Right, we discussed right there. Yishalmi posed a nafkamina between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in the case of nishbasha ochal, and instead of just not eating, I actually throw it into, I destroy it, I burn it up, I throw it into the river, sea. Right, so the Yishalmi implies that this is a nafkamina, that for Reish Lakish you're still going to be patur in this case because it's asra safik, whereas for Rabbi Yochanan you'll be chayev since yesh b'maisa. Right, so last time he focused on the Rabbi Yochanan side of it, but there are implications on the Rosh Hashanah side for what we're discussing. It seems that, if we think about it, whether or not this is still Hasra'a Safek, like Yerushalmi claims, depends on when the Hasra'a must be given. If the Hasra'a must be given B'Sha'as HaShvua, so then, what do you guys think? Hasra'a Safek? No? Yes? Yeah, still Hasra'a Safek, because I say, take the Shvua, don't take the Shvua, if you do, you may not end up eating it. Right, so it's the same Hasra'a Safek problem. That makes sense, and that would be what the Yerushalmi would say. However, if the Asura must be given prior to the violation of the Shvua, right, so then in that case, the Yerushalmi, right, then the violation of the Shvua seems to occur upon the Zrika, right? If he defies their Asura and he throws it, I say, don't throw it because you need to eat it, otherwise you're going to be over, and he throws it, right, and he throws it and he burns it and he destroys it, so then there's no way he's not going to be over the Avera. So l'chora, in that case, it would not be Hasra Safek if you held that the Asura has to be B'Shas Ha'avera ala Shvua, right? And I think this is what, right, so what emerges seems to be that the Yerushalmi assumed, like Rabbi Chananel, that the Asura is B'Shas Ha'avera. I think the Rambam makes his point. And as I said, it's a controversial point we discussed again last time on the Rabbi Yochanan side. Tosfos seems to have had it as a nafmin lehepech in Shvuas, that according to Rabbi Shalkish, this would still be Asura. This would not be Hasra Safek, right? This is no longer Hasra Safek. That makes sense, given if you assume, like the other side, that it needs to be given Shas Ma'asa. Now, within the Bavli, just to point out quickly that Yesh Ladun, how viable this Shita is, the Shita of Rabbi Chananel. Number one, if it's true, then Lechora, Reish Lakish, should hold that there's no Machlis for any Shvuas Bito L'Haba. Right? Not just Shvuas Ochal V'lo Ochel, but also Shvuas Shelo Ochal. Ochel, right? Because if the Asura is given Mishas Ashua, so I tell the person, don't take a Shua, Shema, you won't fulfill it, right? So even if it's Asura's, right, the Asura is the Nishbash Lo Ochal, right? I might say, listen, I'm sorry, Shua Ochal, I might say, listen, don't take the Shua because you may not get a chance to eat it. I'm sorry, you may eat it, you may come to eat it. Right at that moment, even if I don't listen to the Asura, right, and I take the Shvua, I'm not necessarily over. Right? You guys hear this? Right? It seems that if you assume that the Shvua has to be given B'Shas HaShvua, then no matter what, it's going to be every case of Shvua's Bitul Haba will be Asura Tzavi. No, Sam, you look a little puzzled.
Sorry, just say it, maybe.
For if you assume that the Asura has to be B'Shas HaShvua, then l'chora, any time you take a shua that you'll do anything in the future, that'll be Hasra Safek. Because when I give the Hasra, you could take the shua, and if you fulfill it, well, we won't have a problem. We won't have an avera. Right? So even if it's, whether it's nishma shalo ochal, I'm sorry, whether it's nishma shalo ochal v'lo ochal, or nishma shalo ochal v'ochal, you still get the same Hasra. The Hasra being before the shua, don't take the shua, shema lo yizam l'cha l'kayim shvasva. Shema, you won't fulfill it. So don't take the Shua. Right? And in that case, that has to be the Asura for this opinion, right? For Rabbi Chananel. It's got to be before the Shua. And it's clear that I can take the Shua, still not be over, as long as I fulfill it. In the case of Nishba, Shelo Ochal, Ve'ochel, right? I could eat it. But it'll still be Asura Tzavik, right? Now, Lefum Riata, that isn't really, doesn't seem to be consistent, I think, with the Sugya in Shavuos and Tumura, which, the way it presented this, the Sugya seems to report that there's a disagreement between Rosh Hashanah and Rabbi Yochanan regarding this issue when it comes to the other case, right? The standard case, the case that we've been discussing, Nishba She'ochal V'lo Ochal, this agreement concerns, everybody agrees you don't get the Malkus. The question is, why not? When it comes to these other scenarios, however, the Gemara reports no disagreement. Right, in other words, it tells us about Machlokes Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about that side, right? The Shvua Lahaba, when you're talking about a Shvua's Hain Lahaba, right? There's a Machlokes, they both agree you don't get Machlokes, however, one of them thinks it's because of this, the other one thinks it's because of that. The Gemara, however, says that when it comes to Shvua Lo Ochal, the Ochel, you do get Machlokes. It doesn't say that there's a Machlokes about that. Meaning, Reish Lakish, according to what we're saying, L'chora, if you hold this sheet of Rabbi Chananel, should be Asura Safek there too and doesn't get Malkus. Why does the Gemara say that? Right. So it seems like, I would say, the implication of the Gemara, the Mistimas HaGemara regarding this, the implication seems to be there's no disagreement concerning that other scenario. But I think that's not such really a difficult. That's not really such a difficult problem. I think we could easily argue that that's not the case. That the implication of the Gemara is not that. Gemara, in other words, the Reish Lakish indeed holds that there's no malchus in either scenario for the same reason, namely hasra safek, and that there's no implication. Gemara doesn't mean to be contradicting that. The Gemara, if you remember, just quickly, right, the point of departure in the sugya was a statement in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, right? That Rabbi Yochanan held in the name of Rabbi, right? You're not, if there's no ma'isa in looking at chutz minishba meimar mekala. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's statement, right? The shikaso. There is a din of lav sheibah ma'isa in looking alav. So he says, I heard in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that there are three exceptions to that. Nishba is one of them. The Gemara is following up. What is the case for Rabbi Yochanan where nishba? Right. In other words, that you're loke because of this exception, right? That even though it's a lav sheibah ma'isa, you're still loke. That's what we're looking for. So the Gemara says, now the natural thing to have thought was, okay, the case where there's really no ma'isa, right? What's the case where there's really no ma'isa? Nishba she ochal, right? Below ochel, right? So the Gemara says we can't, that's not true because we happen to have a shmua in the name, right? We happen to know for a fact that Rabbi Yochanan actually holds that there's no malchus there. Why? Because Damri Tavai, both Rabbi Yochanan and Shlakish discussed this issue, and they both said there's no malchus. They each had their own reasons, right? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shlakish because of Shosavet. Rabbi Yochanan because lav sheim omaisa vein lokinala, right? So the Gemara says, so that can't be where Rabbi Yochanan had this chiddush applying. Rather, it must be in the case, and if you'll tell me that it's the other case, of nishba shelo ochal ve'ochel, right? Well, that's, you don't need such a chiddush, because that is a case of yesh b'maisa naturally. It doesn't need to have the chiddush, the chiddush of achafisha e'im b'maisa. It is yesh b'maisa. That's all the Gemara is saying. So the Gemara is not reporting on the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Shlakish, because we're just looking for a case of where does Rabbi Yochanan's din, where could it apply the shitaso, right? And the fact that Rabbi Shlakish is brought up with regard to the other scenario, which is just derech agav, the fact that we want to point out that actually we have a record that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't think there are malchus in that case. Rabbi Shlakish for his reason, Rabbi Yochanan for his reason, so rather we have to find somewhere else. So the Gemara is not reporting on what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlakish said on these cases. The Gemara is just trying to find the case for Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, in that context, there's no implication, but in fact, what we're saying, if according to Rabbi Chananel, I think it would emerge, and if Hanami or Rabbi Shlakish wasn't specifically about the case that the Gemara speaks about, namely, Nishba Shalo Ochal the Ochal, or sorry, the opposite, Nishba Shalo Ochal the Lo Ochal, he said that same thing, Asra Safik, and therefore there's no Makos for all Shvitas Bitu'el Abba. I think that's what you would say. Yeah.
Does that mean that Rish Lakish is going to be cholik on Rabbi Yochanan regarding the exception of nishba? I mean, he thinks that you're never chayav malchus for nishba.
It's an interesting question. So first of all, the question is first: does Rish Lakish disagree with the entire din of lav sheim ma'aser lo k'lav? So here there are some Rishonim that think that he does not. That actually he holds of it too. He's saying additional reasons why he doesn't think there's malchus in this case. The Rashi, I believe, says that. I forget exactly where. If you take the standard view that it's just not shy for him, I mean, he doesn't hold of lav sheim ma'aser in lokin alav. There's a tradition, a group of Tanaim and Amoraim who seem to take the opposing view, not what we normally assume, that lav sheim ma'aser they assume lokin alav. So if you take that, then the chiddush isn't shy. And this shmua from Yosef Lili can only be sensible. Right? You only need it if actually that's true, that lav sheim ma'aser in lokin alav. If you say, according to the other view, right, let's take the Rashi view, that it's possible he does hold of that Shmua. I don't know if it's necessary. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe he thought, I never heard that. I don't know. So I'm not sure. I'm not going to get into it. I just want to briefly note it, which is just that there's another textual issue in terms of squaring this Shita with the Bavli, and that is for the Sugyan Chav Ches regarding Hanishba Shal Ochal Kikar Zeh, Im Ochal Kikar Zeh, right, where the issue of Achilas at Tanai, Achilas at Isser. Just if you look through the Sugya there, as far as I know, all the Rishonim that I've seen in terms of their Pirushim, they all revolve around the assumption that there is a Surah B'Shasa Achila. And Lathir, Rabbi Chananel, or that Yerushalmi, let's say, you'd have to probably have some other interpretation. All right, let's just leave it at that. Now, in analyzing this Machlokas, right, turning now just to the Machlokas Svara, right, so I would say as follows. those who require a surah b'shas hashvua, right, like Ibn Hanal, like Yushami, undoubtedly held that the davar shemuzar lav, the veira, is the verbalization of the shvua shakir, and therefore you need the surah right before that, right? Those who require, like I think most of them do, a surah b'shas ha'achila, or the zrika, or whatever it is that violates the shvua. So I think there's two ways to understand. Number one, this is what Sam was saying, perhaps they disagreed about the fundamental issue we mentioned concerning losi shavu, right? They held that the davar shemuzar lav is not verbalizing a shvua sheker, but rather violating a shvua. So the avera is entirely the act which violates a shvua, and that's what requires, therefore, hasra. Alternatively, I think one could say that you could agree the verbalization, the isser is the verbalization of a shvua sheker, and the amais avera is indeed the amiras hashvua. However, hasra needs to be given prior to whatever determines the existence of the avera, and probably more critically, the chiyuv ha'onesh. Right? The hasra is necessary to apply the onesh. So you might say that whatever determines whether there is an onesh, that requires, whatever it is that you do that determines whether or not you're going to be nanesh, that's what requires hasra. So even if you say that the maisa avera in the end was the initial act of the verbalization of the shua, but what determined whether or not that was an avera, and therefore whether or not you would be getting malchus for it, was the violation, and that therefore would get hasra regardless of what the sort of the chetza shel avera was. Okay, I think that's what I would say. I think that is possible, and that depends on hasra issues. But let's just say that it certainly makes sense for a number of different. Certainly, the function of hasra is lahatir atzmo for the onesh. Then it makes sense, even if it's lahafim and shogeg lemezid, in which case you could say that should be dependent on maizavera. Also, I think it makes sense. Yeah.
If you take the tzad that is about verbalizing the shua sheker,
yeah.
So didn't we say that in the cases of shua midu haba, so by definition, when it comes out of your mouth, it can't be a shua sheker yet? Actually, no,
that was an argument that we said, I think, and then we presented. We presented the alternative. Who those who hold that, let's say, is the verbalization of shvua sheker, but it also includes shvua bitui l'haba, like I think the smak I was arguing. What we argued was that they don't agree with that. They think that when you say it, it's either sheker or emes. Sheker, we just don't know yet which one it is. Right, that was the way we said it makes more sense to say. It's. I mean, you're saying something happens tomorrow. Next day, tomorrow, and we'll find out what happens. I mean, but once we see it, so it was sheker. Okay?
Are there other examples that we know of where the maisa isser
is
different than the determination of whether there's a punishment or not?
Maybe the achilas at maisagya. Another example might be, but this depends very much on how you understand it, which maybe touch on later, maybe even later in the Torah, I'm not sure, which is lavin teklase. That's another, I mean, that's where the Ramban is discussing it. Depending on how you understand the bitwa asay, right? Let's say l'man amar bitlo v'lo bitlo, they have to be vatal b'yadayim the asay. So, if you understand it, it seems to be most of them seem to say you need the asura for that. You know, it depends on how you understand it. But if you understand it, that's just a t'nai in there being an avera, right? That the Torah says don't do this, but you can undo it if you want to say you can be maskiya that. Via, let's say, mishaleach the yam, right? So then, if you slaughter the bird, you know, so then you get malchus. So that would be another example where potentially, you know, slaughtering the bird is not the ma'aseh avera. Again, I will caution. This depends on how you understand it. There are Rishon Rashi in particular that says that explicitly believe that shita holds the bitul aseh b'yadayim is part of the avera. That's really it's a two part law. And if you say that, then it undermines this as being an example. But if you don't say that, what?
Saying that's like the part that
that's part of the avera. The avera is, you know, to do the act which not only do the initial sort of lav, but do the act which prevents you from being able to ever be accomplished the nituk. So that might be another example. All right. Okay. So let's go to shua shadness. Good. Yeah. All right. All right. So the azhara of shua shav. So again, we're looking in general just to identify. You know, what the Azhara is, what are these things, what are the consequences. So the Azhara of the Shua Shav, as well as the consequence of Shua Shav in terms of the Onesh, right, these are relatively clear and unambiguous. Pasuk says, right, the Isser, the Azhara in the Torah is pretty explicit, right? The Pasuk says actually twice in two prominent places, right? It starts with the Rosh, right? Losi Sashmer, I call it the Shav. That's the Isser of being Nishbal HaShav. And the Din of somebody who's Mechuyav, so it doesn't specify anywhere that there's some special Onesh. Sorry, it doesn't. When it, okay, so the din of mechuyev. So with regard to mezid, you get malchus. That is part of the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Seglili, that Nishba is one of the exceptions, right? That even though Kumas Basav Lahabia Maisa, but nonetheless, I have a Shemua, there are three exceptions, Nishba being one of them. Gemara says that that is perhaps even first and foremost applicable to Shvuah Shav. In fact, the pasuk from which it's Sarat, Ki Lo Yinakeh, Ki Lo Yinakeh Shem Es Asher Yisal Shemol Shav, Hu Lo Yinakeh, but Beis Shamata Minakeh, Malkin Oso Minakim Oso. So it gets Malkos for that reason. As far as Shogeg, that's what I meant, the Shogeg, there's no specific indication anywhere in the pasuk that there's anything to do with Shogeg, which means that we have the normal din of Shogeg for Chayve Lavin, Pata Belo Klum, and in that respect it is distinct from Shvuos Bitui. Okay? What's not entirely clear is what is a Shvuos Shav, both in terms of what are the particular kinds of claims that qualify for Shav, and here there's some discussion of what's included, and also beyond the particular types, it's not clear what the overarching concept of Shvuos Shav is, just what kind of thing is a Shvuos Shav, what are these different types, the different types that we're looking to identify, what are these different types examples of? Right, what's the overarching notion, which is what is the idea of Shvuah Shav? Yeah.
Just a technical question.
Yes.
The pasuk of Lo Sisa Shem Hashav.
Yeah.
Does that play into the
No. No, that's understood. Yeah, that's understood differently. Lo Sisa Shem Hashav is referring to it's a din running based in. Yeah. Different. Even though, you know, not for what you saw in Chazal, I'm not sure I would know that. Yeah, I agree. Sounds like it could be the same thing, but it's not understood that way. All right, so regarding the particular types, so the Mishnah on Chavtes, right, mentions examples of Shvuah Shav, three types of claims, or at least that's how the Rambam enumerates them. Right, number one is swearing upon a claim whose falsity is obvious and self-evident and well-known, right? This is, it's the example given, al Eben Jehuza, right, al Isha Isha, right? The Mishnah's terminology, right, is Nishva, Lashanos Seidua, you try to deviate, right, Lashanos here doesn't mean to change, it means to deviate in the sense of, you know, much Lashanos Nishva. You try to deviate with what you're saying, from what's well known and obvious. In the Rambam's terminology, this is Nishba al Dabar Hayadua, She'enu Kain, right? That's number one. Number two is swearing to do something that is not within your ability to do or not do. It's not under your control, it's not subject to your will. The Mishnah's terminology for this is Dabar She'i Efshar Lo, right? The Rambam's Dabar She'en Bo Koach Lasos Lo Lasos. Now, what seems to be the Mishnah's example of this is actually somewhat unclear, right? The Gemara Parech Ba'avir in Lower Isi Gemara Parech Ba'avir, that ultimately is subject to the Gemara to Machlokus, the Gemara what it means, and then you have Machlokus Rishonim interpreting what that means. The clear example on the one which the Rambam brings. What? The clear example that the Rambam brings initially is just Rabbi Yochanan's case, which is Shvuah Shelo Isha and Gimel Yom. Right, that's a davar she'i efshar lo, im b'kofel lasos. Right, sleep comes regardless, and it isn't really up to you. So that's a case where it's physically impossible. We'll soon see, as Asher's hinted to, that it's not limited to that. And the third example in the Mishnah is nishba levatel as a mitzvah. Right, so from the Mishnah, this sounds like this is an independent category. However, in the course I gave you, some Rishonim seem to view this as a further example of one of the prior categories. And here you have two views. The Rashi and the Riyaz, they both take it as an example, as a further example of Davar She'i Efshar Lo. Right? Inasmuch as you're not able to be Mivatal Mitzvah, we'll get to discuss this in a second. Inasmuch as you're not able to be Mivatal Mitzvah, so then it's a Davar She'i Efshar Lo, and therefore it's a Shvuah Shav, because that's a Shvuah Shav. The Meiri, albeit in a more limited context, but he speaks of it as a kind of Nishba L'shanos Sayyadua, the Adam.
For Lusa.
Yeah. What?
For
Master. So the Miri, is bringing this up in the context of trying to explain complicated Machlokas Rishonim and Rishami and Bavli about Shvu Levatel Mitzvah B'Kol. Whether or not it's going to be Chal if the Shvu actually encompasses beyond just the Bittul HaMitzvah, things which it could be Chal upon, but also the Bittul HaMitzvah. So is it going to be Chal in that case? So there are some Rishonim who felt that we possibly both Yerushalmi and Bavli, and the key to resolving them is to distinguish between los ases kum yases and sheva taises ases. But in that context, he brings this up. I'm more interested in if you're a mechalik, and if you're a mechalik, then the whole Mishnah here is referring to that case specifically.
The Mishnah only says ases.
What?
The Mishnah only says ases. Sukkah.
Right, so that's the question, is whether or not that's it's limited to that. Bikolo. Again, everybody agrees that if it's not Bikolo, there's no difference. The question is, does Bikolo manage to get a slot to get around the problem? Again, I don't want to so much focus on that. It's a large question with many things that would be looked at in order to balance it. Yeah.
So, case of Shua, I'll train, Shibutrain, is that included in there? Is that a separate cut? Is that also part of Shua?
No, so we'll get to that. Oh, that's no, that's Shami. That doesn't appear in the Mishnah,
right?
But or the Bavli,
right? But
we'll see the Yerushalmi.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
The
Ram does. Yeah.
Rashi says that Shua Bittul Mitzvah is the same as Shua Shi'i of Shah. How does Rashi read that Mishnah?
Which Mishnah?
The Mishnah with the list, as in it starts off with.
Yeah.
EFSHAR, different shvuah, and then goes back to EFSHAR.
So I'm not as bothered by that, even though I thought about it, because anyway, the mission is kind of strange in that it lists sort of examples by a principle almost, and then gives examples, like concrete examples, more concrete. And it's never entirely clear, I think. You know, Ezu shvuah shav, nishmah shav, zidul adam, al-amaj al-avin shvuah shazav, al-yishu shvuah isha. Right, then he says, but according to, it's clear according to, the, let's say just an example, according to Abaye's reading of the case of Imlor Isi, that's just a case of Shvua Lashana Sazayedua. It's saying, it means Shvua Shere Isi Gamal Parech Be'avir, which is obviously not so, right? So according to Abaye Akrochenu, the Mishnah is kind of a little bit of a jumble. It gives principles and some examples, and they're not necessarily even following each other. So I'm not sure, you know, as the Rashi says, that ultimately we can boil these down to, you know, the following. It also doesn't, I mean, maybe there's a prominent example of Shvua Shi'ef Shar. Maybe that wasn't even so obvious that it is such a thing, but it is, and that's what the Mishnah is telling you. Right? So just textually, literarily, I don't think it's terrible. It's just, you know, the Mishnah wanted to call attention to this example, and happens to be that where does it fit in? It's actually a prominent, maybe surprising, you know, outgrowth of one of the other ones. But already in Abaye, you realize that something, you know, not everybody read this Mishnah as being so systematic, because according to Abaye, this line here, Shvua Shereisi, Gamal Parech Be'avir, that's not, I mean, maybe he thinks that that's Dabar Shei Yafshar L'Chor, that's simply a Shvua Shav, a Nishvah L'Shana Sehidu. Not sure. In any event, it seems to be clearly something that fits under that category, too. So, okay. Here? I agree with you, though, that you know, the simple, more smooth way to read it is the way you know, Rambam read it. But I don't think it's so bad that you have, you know, a broad category, and there's a very prominent example of that broad category the Mishnah is calling attention to. So the Meiri, in that context that we're speaking of, right, so he mentions the possibility of viewing, let's say, Nishma L'Echol as an Avela, as a kind of Reshvu L'Vatal Samitzvah, as a kind of L'Shana Sayedua. Right? And the idea is, he says, it essentially amounts to a statement that Achilas Nevela is Mutter. So it isn't, right? And that's well known. Now, both of these views, both the view of the Rashi, or us, that it's a kind of Dabar Shei Yafshar Lo, as well as the view of the Meiri, who speaks of it as kind of Lashana Seyedua, both of these, I think, reflect upon a particular understanding of the nature of Shuas Bitul Abba, and I'll just make one comment on it, in particular, the nature of its binding authority. Authority, how it manages to impose obligations upon the nishba. One way to understand shvuas bidul abba is that fundamentally, really, it's no different than a shvuas bidul lishavar. It's simply you're claiming the truth. You're swearing to the truth of this statement. Just that, whereas one is a claim about the past, the other involves a claim about the future. The fact that a shvuas bidul abba has legal implications, that it has binding authority. You're chayav to do whatever you've said. Right, that whatever you've sworn to, that's simply a byproduct of the Isser of Shvua Sheker. To the extent that it is within your hands to determine whether the Shvua L'Abba that you've taken is Emes or Sheker, so the Isser of Shvua Sheker demands and makes you responsible to make sure that it's a Shvua's Emes. Right, you're not allowed to swear to claims that are false. Regarding a Shvua upon a claim in the future, so that fact translates into your responsibility, your requirement to see to it that it's true. To fulfill that shvuah, so that you weren't nishba l'sheker. Okay? That's one way to view it. Now, if we understand it in that way, so then I think it's very hard to understand either view, right? Either the Rashi Riyaz view or the Miri's view. Right? The claim on this view, the claim that you're swearing to here is, I'm ofel nevelos tomorrow, let's say. Right? Nishba lefel nevelos tomorrow. Or let's say, I don't put on tzon tomorrow. Right? it's certainly, if Charlo, right, it's certainly under your control, subject to your will, to either do that Avera or not, right? You can eat, unfortunately, a Jew can eat Achilles and Avelos and not put up his own. I've seen it done, right? Unfortunately. So it doesn't seem like, you know, you're it's not a Charlo, it is a Charlo, nor does it seem to involve any premise that it's Mudder. I'm just saying, I'm going to eat an Avelos tomorrow. I'm going to do an Avera tomorrow. I'm swearing to that. Right, so if that was how Shua Sheker, Shua Bita Levan worked, it's hard to see how you would explain it as being either of these, an example of either of those categories. However, I think the alternative premise enables you to understand it a little better. The alternative way to understand it, the way to understand the how the Shua Laba manages to impose an obligation, is that in fact a Shua Laba involves an additional concept which is unique to it, which isn't Shia for Shua Bita Levan Avar. The Shuas Bitar Laba is the Torah's Mechadishit as a method of authoring a norm, of introducing and imposing upon yourself a new Isser or a new mitzvah. Right? The Torah grants the person the ability, the Torah has mitzvahs, and the Torah grants you the ability to impose upon yourself additional mitzvahs or Isser by means of a Shuas Bitar Laba. Right? And therefore, when I say in this understanding that take a Shuah to eat Nevela, right? So that's actually an attempt to introduce and impose upon oneself a mitzvah to eat nevela. That's what you're doing. You're saying, I am hereby mitzvahing myself, in essence, using the method that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me, to eat nevela. Right? So then it can be understood very easily to fall into one of these two problems. One possibility is to say that this is something which is Embo Koach La'asos. In other words, you have no ability, you're not authorized, you're not legally, you're doing a legal act via Shavuos Laba, and it's not one which you are empowered to do. You cannot erase or override or overwrite the tzivuyim of the Ribono Shel Olam. You're meshuvah to those mikvar, right? So you can't do that. Therefore, it's a davar she'eifshar lo, right? I'm trying to do something legal which I don't have the legal power to do. Or you might say, perhaps that's so obvious that you can't rewrite the Ribono Shel Olam's laws, right? In writing your own, you can't rewrite them, you can't override them, contradict them. Maybe that's so obvious that instead we take it as sort of an implicit premise of the Shvuah that you're being nishvah to, that this is currently something which I actually am mutter, it's mutter for you to do. Now, that would be the motivation to view such a statement. Nishvah, ani nishvah lechol as a nevela lemacha, right? So that's understood. Obviously you can't make it a mitzvah to do something which the Torah asks you to do. So the problem here is that by taking a Shvuah, you're implicitly saying it's mutter for me to do so. It's mutter for me to eat nevela, and what I'm trying to do, therefore, is make it a mitzvah to eat nevela, right? If you, right, since it's just a davar pashut, you can't. I mean, the Torah wouldn't authorize norms that undermine, right? Wouldn't authorize you to undermine its own system, right? So therefore, it's equivalent. So it doesn't work to be mechel a isra or a shvua, but the problem, the reason that it's not a shvua's bitoy, you know, that we just say you have to be over, is because it's. And the reason, rather, that it's a Shavuot Shav is because it implies that this is mudder for you to do. It's the equivalent of saying, this is mudder for me to do, and therefore I'm making it a mitzvah. And this is something which is equivalent to saying, Allah Evan Shehuzah. It's not mudder for you to eat nevelos. You essentially are saying it is. Therefore, that's going to be a problem of Shavuot Shav. Yeah, of the case of Shavuot Shav, they do it.
So he basically formulates these two things as well, but he splits them between the first premise you said, to Asay, meaning it's creating a new Shibud.
Right.
Which you can't create a...
Right, that's true.
You can't create a new Shibud if there's already a Shibud.
Right.
And Lo Sasay, exactly. He says...
Yeah.
You can't... It's like... So...
That would be... The Shita that holds that way, I think you could explain that. Again, you could... You know, the Shita that he's explaining there, that there's a Chiluk, regarding the Koluk, you could explain that there are these two Dinim, precisely.
But you're saying that each side could apply to both Lo Sasay and Asay.
I think that's the case. I think so. I mean, I have to think about it. It wasn't like so obvious to me that the language wouldn't apply in the other case. So
right. He wasn't here to back it up. He just kind of said it.
Yeah.
If one formulated a shvuah, I guess it would be the opposite of the case that we have. But let's say he took a shvuah to not. I know we had a discussion about whether once you take a shvuah to not eat bechlal, if olchon the nevelos, meaning
that's the kolok case. Yeah.
Right. But I'm saying, so let's say you made a shvuah where nevelos would have been included, right? Meaning you would have been over the shvuah, and the next day, for like say, if you koach nefesh, you had to eat.
What was the shvuah that we'd eat in Nevela?
Meaning, if the formulation of the shvuah was such right. that it was kolo, so right. it included everything.
Interesting. I have to look into it. I'm not sure. But why an availability of the Yifa?
No, exactly. Let's say, I don't know, let's say it's the only thing available or whatever. Or
so you say that all... I imagine it would be Chal to take a Shavua. Well, that'll be... Okay, so that'll be a Shavua. The Chaim is a mitzvah, maybe.
Right, because it's right? Chaim.
So, yeah. So, but on the other hand, it would probably be no worse than, let's say, a Shavua that I'll learn this parak today, which is Chal, since you have... You know, the mitzvah doesn't demand that you learn this parak today.
Right.
So probably if I say, okay, if I need to eat Nevela for... Right. For Bilanevish purposes, or if I need to eat and the only thing available to Nevela, I don't know. Think about it. Yeah. All right. Now, just to point out, again, Mar Makom Anilach here, this question regarding Shavuot Sevi'it D'Lahava is an issue that comes up in a number of places. It's a question, it's a major question in the first, in you know, the third parak. And I'll just mention one example where I think it clearly does emerge, which is the issue of the Shir Pachos Mikizayis question. Right? The Machlokas and the Mishnah in the first Mishnah in Shavuot Shayim Basra, in Dr. Yitesan Beis, where the Mishnah quotes the Machlokes of Bikiva. Bikiva holds that if I say Shavuot Shalom Ochal, then I'm Chayiv if I'm Ochal Koshu. Right? And the Chachamim respond that that's not the case. Why? Because they say, Hechan Matzina Ba Ochal Koshu Shu Chayiv. Shuze Chayiv, right? Achilos, the Yisur Achila and the Torah are always Be Kezayit, not Be Koshu. Right? So the simplest way to take the Chachamim here, right, the Hechan Matzina, is that the kezayis for chachamim is not simply a din, a quantitative shear, how much you have to eat in order to become chayiv, but rather it's a qualitative shear, defines the act of achila. What they're saying is if I eat, pieces of dust or crumbs, that's not in my achila. By definition, achila, the notion of achila, as opposed to just passing things through your mouth, right? You know, things that enter your mouth and go through your system, but that's not an act of achila. An act of achila requires a kezayis, and therefore, when I say nishbash ochal, just halakhically speaking, what that means is I'm not going to eat a kezayis. But this is exactly how the Miri formulates it. Again, I didn't put this in my chorus. He says the chacham sovrim shalom atzino ochal koshu mischayev vein kan bitul bibur, meaning I haven't contradicted what I've said. I haven't violated what I've said. She'in achilas koshu kruya achila kla. That's the simplest way to take it. A very different note is sounded though by the Rimagash. The language of the Rimagash is quite suggestive. What he says is Amru lo l'rbikiu, hecha matzino is the Rimagash of Chaf Alef Beis, that means Yuri was on New Testament Beis. Hecha matzino ba'ochal koshu shechayev, perush, hare kol isurin shebetorah, ha'ochal osan ino chayev ela achi yochal me'en kezayis. This is the language. V'zeh, kevan shenishba akikar zeh shalo yochlena, na'aseh salav asura. V'kevan shekein, aman is chayev ala b'koshu. It becomes an isur achila. And the din is, right, that the Surah Achila are only Chaya because right? The Nazis of a Surah, you're imposing an Isra upon yourself. Now this is Machalos Asuros, right? It's not just that we can't contradict what you said. That you said, right, that you said I'm not gonna eat, right? And that's all that means. No, you've made an Isra Achila to eat. And once that's the case, then the dinim governing Surah Achila, which are the dinim governing the Torah's Surah Achila, you added a new one to it. Take over and you're a chai because eyes. So that's just one example. Head explanation doesn't come in of where this question comes up. Alright, that's all in the Mishnah. Now we get to the Yushami. The Yushami adds another case, which isn't there. Namely, right, the case of train to train. The case of Shnaim Shu Shnaim, Al Evan Shu Evan, Al Zav Shu Zav. Right, this is the Rama's formulation. Nishba Al Davar She'im Adam Savito. You say something which is true, but obviously true. Not something which requires anybody to say it. It's just self-evident. Now here you have a machlokas rishonim, and this I think machlokas is the key to unlocking not just the particulars, but the question beyond the particulars. What is the concept of a shvuah shayim? The Rambam and the Rif, I think, and most others probably, simply pasken this Yushami kipshuta, right? That we have a fourth category here of shvuah shayim, nishva le ala evin shu evin, not just ala evin shu zev, but ala evin shu evin. Now, textually, there is something a little bit curious here, which is the fact that the Mishnah, and for that matter the Bavli, doesn't mention it. We'll start with just the Mishnah. Why does it mention the Mishnah? So the Rebbe actually has a good answer to it, which I'll come back to. However, as I pointed out to you guys, the Tosas Rid, as he cited in the Piskei Riyaz, disagrees. He doesn't quite paskin against the Yushalmi. He says rather what? Yeah, that's an Issa Derabanan. That doesn't qualify for the Issa Devart of the Issa Shvua Shav Minatar. Now, in terms of why you would say that, so there is obviously the textual fact that it's just not mentioned in the Mishnah. And if it really is the fourth category, right, why wouldn't it be there? But conceptually, the chiluk seems quite clear. beyond the textual point, there's a conceptual, seemingly a divide here. All the other cases, right? The question is just why be mechalik? All the other cases, all the other examples in the Mishnah can all be understood to involve a shvua sheyesh bo sheker, a shvua that's false. Right? This is obviously the case regarding nishba l'shana sezeyadua. Right? Obviously. Regarding shvua b'davar she'im b'koach lasos, so that's obviously true regarding certain examples, right? Particularly those that are physically impossible. I will fly up to the air tomorrow by flapping my arms. Right? That's obviously false at the moment you say it. Other types of shvua she'im b'shuso lasos are not quite as obvious. As an example, shvua she'yizrok ploni. And here I'll just point out, and we'll get to this a little bit later, lomid ba'yel shitas Rashi, who said, right, that no matter what happens, that is a shvua shav, even if he throws it, right? But even the Shittas Rambam, as the Pashas of Rambam, we'll get to the Rebush's alternate reading after, even the Shittas Rambam, that it isn't necessarily shav, it depends on what happens, but even he agrees that if he throws it, however not, I don't know if you saw this, he noted it, right, he doesn't just say if he throws it, you're not going to be located. If he throws it, why? Anybody notice that? Pick up on it? Anybody have the Rambam? He says if he throws it after hearing of your shvua, shema, what does he say? He doesn't say shema yizrok. He says maybe something will connect. What?
Machlas shvua.
I don't know if he's, is that the language? He should skaim shvua. So and then what would be the case where that is considered to be the case? He says not just. Do you have it?
No.
It's Rambam in. I have it in the first sheet. Rambam in Hey Beis, I think. He says Efshar that this other person will hear that you take the shvuah and therefore throw. So according to the Rambam, I think it's quite evident. I mean, we'll see. The Rifash ignored that, but I think can't ignore it. He says it. Right, what is it? You have it?
Yeah. And if someone can just kalkin l'kayim derizah nishba.
No, before. Right now, it's obvious that by the fact that Rama mentions it's completely superfluous if it's not necessary, right? I mean, if it's only going to be loka if he doesn't throw, so all you'd have to say is because Efshar Sheyizro. If the Rama is not going to just tell you how it came that if it's not a relevant point, apparently he needs to do it because of the Shvuah, right? So if he just throws it, then so even the Rambam will say, even if he throws it, so that is still potentially a shvuah shav, right? If he throws it, but not as a result of hearing a shvuah. And in this case, what you swore was that Yezer Ploni. Ploni swore. Ploni threw it. Right? According to Rashi, you're going to be loga shav. And according to Rambam, if he didn't throw it because of your shvuah, also it's a shvuah shav.
How would that be?
Well, we'll come back to it. Yeah, we'll come back to it. But the point I'm saying, this challenges the notion that all these shvuos are shvuos sheyesh b'hem sheker. This one doesn't seem to have sheker, and nonetheless it seems to be shav. But I think that one can nonetheless understand that these are sheker too. In other words, that one can contend that the shvuos bitul la'aba implies, by your taking such a shvuah, that implies that the matter being sworn to is up to you, is up to the nishba. When you take a shvuah that X will happen, so what you're saying is, halachically, what we're attributing to that is, what you're saying is, I swear, I will see to it that this happens. I will make it happen. Now, that works well, and it makes sense, it fits, when you're discussing something that actually you can do. You can see to it that happens, something that is b'shus kalasos, but something that ultimately is not really a matter of your determination and will, right? It's not the case. So what we're saying is that when I say, you know, shvuah shev, X, so that really entails the implicit claim that this is something that is under my control to make it happen. It's a matter of my will and intent, which is being expressed through the shvua. What I'm trying to do is express that it will happen by taking a shvua that it will happen, and the implicit claim is it matters what I'm saying. Meaning, it matters my will and my intent, which I'm swearing to now that this will happen, that'll make it happen. But if it's shvua al acherim, that isn't true. It doesn't depend on you. It's not something that you can, it's not something which is a candidate to being, you know, I can see to it that it happens. Ultimately, it doesn't depend on you. So your shvua that it will happen is almost a sheker meikaro because it really doesn't depend on you. What do you mean? He'll throw it, don't worry. the implication of that statement, at least halachically, when you take a shvua to it, is I'll make it so. Where that isn't something that can be said accurately, where, now, here, point out, let's point out, if I physically, you know, make him grab the thing and then kind of release his arm, that's my act as Rikalach,
speaking. Right, so that was that's the Ramaz with the kid.
Yeah, like I said, that's just the Tosefta and Shabbos, right? That you know, if I'm kosev via taking your hand and on Shabbos and I you know make you grip it and then I move your hand along, so I'm chayiv and you're not. You didn't do the act of sevaya. I just used your body as a chetza. So the point is that in as much as his throwing requires his agency, his will, it's not something that I can make. I mean, maybe he'll agree, maybe he won't. To the extent that it's up to him, if it's not up to him, it's a problem. Then it's not Shi'izra. It means that I'm throwing. So that's implicitly Sheker, I think one can argue. And Shu'el Levatel's a mitzvah, so I think also clearly, at least for those who shown that we saw that held it as an example of one of the prior categories, also is an example of Shu'el Sheker. For the Mi'iri, it's simply equivalent of stating a falsehood. You're saying, right, this is mudra for me to do. And it's mudra for me to eat in a veil. For the Rashi and the Riyaz, it's equivalent. To introducing the obligation to do X, which is a legal impossibility, and therefore a fiction. You can't say, right, I'm making it a mitzvah to eat nevela. No, you're not. That's not true. You can't do that. Right? So I think this is the assumption, is that these are all possibly, you know, given the caveats we've seen, shvua shekers. And what the Tosafot Ritter understood is, shvua shav, right, now we come to the overarching question, shvua shav is a particular variety of shvua sheker. In particular, it involves, what it offers is ridiculous shvua sheker, silly shvua sheker, absurd shvua shekers. Right? Shvua shekers that are just stupid. Right? Not simply false, but absurd. But, it's also will tell you, but shvua emes, like Yerushalmi, that could be nisser on the Karshim. Who said that? Nobody said. If you take a shvua emes, there's nothing to say. I mean, maybe it's not there's no reason to do it, but that can't be nisser. Lo Caesar, Shem Lashav is not just sheker, but when it's a ridiculous sheker, when it's an absurd sheker. You're not trying to convince anybody of something, you're just saying something stupid. So if you're saying a falsity, swearing to a falsity, which is just silly, so then that's the, that actually is a separate law. That's this law of Losisha, but that's what it is. Yeah?
If every shuah shav is basically subsumed under sheker, why do you have a separate category of shav in the first place?
So on this view, I think that the two possible answers to this. But let's take the view of one answer is it's simply something which a Torah gives a separate law for on its own. So that depends. So that's where I think there's two possibilities. According to the Mechassinach, yes, right? The Mechassinach which I showed you guys that the Mechassinach thinks that you're loki mishmash sheker. So then, yeah, it would be a law for love of shnei lavin. You did a shmash sheker. Second of all, it was a stupid sheker. So that actually, the Torah says, you get another set of models for that. I think the alternative would be to say that there's something unique. The Torah treated it differently. Didn't see it as right. It's sheker, shvus emes. There's nothing. I mean, it's just shvus emes. But there's shvus sheker, where the sheker was, you know, to try to convince somebody, to try to commit yourself to something. That's one kind of shvus sheker. And then there's shvus sheker, which is just pointless. And that's a separate type of shvua sheker. I mean, the Torah treats these separately. They're two different kinds. We'll get to this a little bit. Two different avlos, you might say. But both of them involve the fact that it isn't true. If it's true, it's a shvua emes. I mean, what can you say? All right. Is it possible? This is not ideal. Maybe hopefully next time we'll have the kinks worked out.